Today we're going to be continuing our discussion of ideal gases. On Wednesday, we talked about the first of our example problems. And for those of you present in lecture, I'm going to flip it back to that just one moment to remind us what the problem was. We had a balloon, which we said was a flexible variable volume container, so something that the volume could adjust. And we talked about what would happen if that balloon went into a refrigerator. And so the end result, mathematically, was this discussion of a manipulation of the ideal gas equation. And so we came up with a relationship that said volume was proportional to temperature. And that makes sense, because the higher the temperature is, the more that molecules are bouncing around. And if the container is flexible, then that means the container is going to respond to that. Now, of course, in these examples, we're not worried about real life, that the material will have some resistance to it, so at some point there won't be as much give. That's all details not worried about in these problems. So this is an idealized balloon. So where I want to start today is what I totally ran out of time for the other day, which is to talk about the metal box. Now, yes, even a rather rigid container can change its volume if you put enough difference in pressure on it. So just out of curiosity, because I know the series has been off the air a little while now, how many of you know who the Mythbusters are? Ever heard of them? Ever seen their series? Few of you. Those of you who are my past students know that I had the opportunity to be the host for when they came to the Flint Center one time and did their question-answer routine, which that was about the most petrified I've been in front of an audience ever, because there were 2,000 screaming kids, and they're all there for them, of course, not me. So it's like, don't screw this up. Anyways, the point is, in one of those episodes, they did this thing where they had a big, huge metal drum, you know, the type you've probably seen that they ship chemicals in. And they did this thing where they filled it up with hot water, boiling water, and so in other words, it was steam that was in the inside, and then they capped it. And of course, what happens, and that's what we're going to talk about in this example here, what happens when the temperature drops? Well, the pressure in the inside drops because the volume can't change. And then what happens is the outside atmospheric pressure is so great in comparison that it literally crushes it. And it was, what episode was that? I will try to find out. If anybody's like really super uber quick with the internet and can find out. It was so funny because it didn't explode, it imploded. So like it wasn't going to hurt anybody, but it must have made quite a noise because the cameraman literally like hopped backwards from it. And in fact, I think they even included a shot from the side so you can see this poor person like, ah! When the thing went, so, and it was quite a thud. And then they crushing can experiment. And then what they did is they increased that to a tanker car, like the type that's on a rail car, a railroad car, the type that would hold chemicals. And they even did it to that. So like boiled water on the outside or the inside, tried to fill it up totally with steam, and then sealed it off and hosed it down with wet water. And I think they had the cheap, and I think they actually got the darn thing to bend too. You can do this with a simple metal gas can that you could get from Home Depot. And I even remember back in 4th, 5th, 6th grade, one of our instructors doing exactly that. Getting some hot water, putting it on the inside, making sure it's steam on the inside, sealing it off, dunking it in cold water. And but again, it's not that the inside is the vacuum, it's the problem that's the outside pressure. That was a really long story to make you at least a little bit interested in boring gas laws. But now let's get to the point, which is, in these discussions, the metal box is indestructible. So the metal box is not going to change volume. This is fixed volume. All right. So let's say that we start with a container that is 1 liter in size, and I'll do the same thing I did the other day. We'll pretend that we're doing sig fig, so 1.00 liters, and we'll start it at 1 atmosphere pressure, and we'll start it at 25 degrees Celsius, which is standard temperature, and not pressure, at least standard temperature What's the actual correct standard pressure supposed to be?
STP.
Well, STPs are abbreviation. And, yes, there we go. It's one bar pressure that would be STP condition. So this is at least standard temperature, but not exactly standard pressure. But that doesn't matter. This is just a set of conditions for the problem. And let's put it into a freezer, which, if I recall, from Wednesday, we decided to make that negative 10 degrees. So now, of course, over time, everything inside and outside the container is going to reach the same temperature. That's related to something that you could call the zeroth law of thermodynamics, if any of you have had your physics before. But ignoring that, you know that the container size is going to be 1 liter still because I said it's fixed volume and it's not going to magically implode because it's indestructible. It's made out of mithril unobtainium if it has to be. How's that? Okay. So the question is, well, at negative 10 degrees Celsius then, what's the pressure going to be? And we've already had this discussion yesterday about what's going to happen. So I'll say it in short form here. When the temperature decreases, the energy of the molecules also decreases. And so therefore, if the volume doesn't change, then the pressure decreases. When temperature decreases, the average energy of the molecule decreases. And I guess the bit that I should throw in to make this more precise. So I saw the chat window there. Let's see. When temperature decreases, the average energy of the molecules decreases. So the molecules collide with the inside of the container. With less energy. And I know I just said that they have less energy, but the point is then this. If the volume doesn't change, something else does, and that's pressure. Since the volume will not change, because the Mythbusters are not involved, the pressure must change. So that's our second example. Fixed volume, variable pressure, and then variable temperature. So let's do the PV equals NRT thing, because the summary equation is P1V1 over T1 is equal to P2V2 over T2. So, but volume doesn't change. So let's cancel that out of the equation. And so we can simplify this to P1 over T1 is equal to P2 over V2.
Did you mean T2?
Right. I'm sorry, yes. I got distracted. I saw someone else was joining the class there. All right. So I had expressed this, which let me make sure I copy exactly what I did. Ah, that's right. So I expressed this in a different way on Wednesday, where instead of an equation, I came up with a relationship. And the relationship is here is that pressure is proportional to temperature. Now we have one other relationship, which I know that we did a mathematical problem the other day And we will do more practice, but I'm running a little behind the schedule I want to be on. So I will save further problems like that until I make sure that we get through everything else that's on the list for today. Okay? So questions about the second exercise before we move to the third one. Okay? So the third example would be something like this. And again, apologies for the less than stellar performance on the artistic abilities here. All right, so what I'm trying to show you here is if you have some kind of piston. Maybe something inside of an engine, for example. And imagine that this piston is being compressed so that you're forcing the volume to decrease. What would you guess is going to happen if you force the volume to decrease? Pressure is going to increase. That's right. So if the volume is decreased, the surface area that the atoms or molecules have to collide with also decreases. And since pressure is forced over area, pressure is going to increase. Let's see. Maybe I should move this to another page so it all fits. One moment. Sorry. Getting there. There we go. So, if does the work the same way for a sports vehicle? You know, I'm not a gearhead. I can ask my neighbor who's pretty good with cars exactly how things work in a sports vehicle. I just don't happen to know myself, but I've seen him working on engines and things before, so I'll ask him when I see him the next time. From a socially safe distance, I must say. Okay, so what was I saying? Ah, yes. If the volume of a gas is decreased, and let's throw something else in, while maintaining temperature, the surface area inside the container will also decrease. Since pressure is force divided by area, this means the pressure will increase. And so to do the last relationship, Again, starting with P1 V1 over T1 is equal to P2 V2 over T2. Temperature is being maintained here. And so that means we're going to have P1 times V1 equal P2 times V2, which rewritten as a proportion, it's going to look different this time. Pressure is inversely proportional to temperature. I'll write the equation out in English. Pressure is in... I'm sorry, I said temperature because I'm distracted. Ah! I meant volume. Which is now correct. Pressure is inversely proportional to volume. And it was asked in lecture the other day, do I care about the names of these individual laws? No disrespect to whoever might have discovered them. But, you know, that's a complicated topic itself, which I'll talk about that one of these days. But I'm more concerned about just making sure you understand the chemistry at the moment. So any questions about the three examples we've now gone through? The balloon, which is variable volume dependent on temperature. The metal box, which is variable pressure dependent on temperature. And then the piston here, which is variable volume, depending on pressure. Okay, if you do come up with questions, go ahead and throw them in the chat window or unmute yourselves. But we'll go ahead and move on. Now, there are two manipulations of the ideal gas law that your textbook does as ways of working problems. And again, in class here today, we're not going to take the time to actually work the problems, but since I know I gave you example problems to work in the text, that's why I want to make sure to get through these equations. So I'll call these... I know it sounds fussy, but it's the best way to call it. Manipulations. Oops. Of the ideal gas law. So, starting with PV equals NRT. How do we get moles from something? That's equal to mass divided by its molar mass, which since that's a bunch of M's, let's make sure we all know what this is. Lowercase mass versus, I'll put feet on these M's to make them more explicitly uppercase. So that is molar mass. So what if we substitute that back into the equation? So one moment here. We get PV equals M over double M times RT. So now doing another substitution. Oh, I'm sorry. I just saw your question. So you just simply explained the three laws. Yes. Backing up to the previous discussion, the three examples were trying to give you a physical picture of what's happening to gases so that it's not just a problem on the page, that you can imagine these molecules bouncing around and doing something. And so that's why there was so much description in how I told the story of how the molecules are bouncing around. And I talked about three very distinct situations that get at these three classical laws that normally you learn about in general chemistry classes. All right. And now I'm just focusing a little bit on the math. And what I'm leading up to is, how do we define density? So that was a rhetorical question, but let me turn around and ask it. What is density? That's right. So density, which is often expressed as rho, that's equal to mass divided by volume. So then what if we substitute that, or what if we try to get that from this equation from up above? Because if we have mass divided by volume, let's see, hold on here, mass and volume. So we need to divide both sides of the equation by V, so we get mass over volume. And we need to multiply both sides of the equation by RT. So watch your instructor try to be fancy. So V is going to come up down there. And then all the rest of this is going to move over here. So what we get is the following. We get M over V is equal to P times molar mass over RT. So it's a manipulation of that equation to get you the density of a gas. One other manipulation is, what if you want to solve for the molar mass itself? So then, what would molar mass be? Well, we take this last equation, and we'll take RT and P and flip them. And so if we do that, you're going to get molar mass is equal to MRT over PV. Questions about how I did any of that math? Okay, so let's move on. Now, we use this next topic in lab, which both sections have now had lab. So let me say this, and I'm going to say this again when I summarize the topics on the quiz. The discussion of what an ideal gas is, that is part of the lecture quiz. In fact, since you all that are here right now can see the lab notes that we took the other day. No, you don't have to talk. Be able to talk about the... yes, I'll go back in just a second. No, you don't have to be able to talk about the redox. No, you don't have to talk about the limiting reagent. But yes, you have to be able to talk about the ideal gas. Temperature is always in Kelvin, no matter what kind of problem we work. So even though I might have given you Celsius in places, you always have to convert it into Kelvin. I'll get to the structure of the quizzes at the end of the lecture when I talk about the quiz review. So here, where you had this equation where you added pressures together, that is a topic known as partial pressure. And so no, you don't have to know this discussion here about the height and the water and all that, but yes, you have to know about being able to add pressures together. So now let's go back to today's lecture. Someone wanted me to go back to this page. If you want to take your screenshots, go ahead, or if any of you had questions, please go ahead. All right, so now let's go to this discussion of partial pressure. And let's say that you had some kind of container that had three different gases. And so, for example, let's say that we have one atmosphere pressure of carbon dioxide. Let's say that we have one atmosphere of nitrogen. And let's say that we have, let's make it a different number, sorry. Let's make that two atmospheres of nitrogen. And let's say that we have three atmospheres of neon. Now, if these were all ideal gases, it shouldn't matter what the identities of these gases are. They would all be treated exactly the same, because they all are particles that supposedly don't have any volume to them, so then they're all the same volume. And then they all retain whatever energy they have when they collide, so they mix them the same that way too, and then no intermolecular forces. Well, neon is a single atom, and it does form a gas, but only a really, really low temperature. So actually, maybe this isn't the best. I mean, I'm thinking liquid. Never mind, sorry. Long week. Neon's not polar. That's what I'm trying to say. Neither is nitrogen, because it's two of the same atoms put together. Carbon dioxide, same thing. Linear molecule, so it's non-polar. So they don't have much in the way of intermolecular forces. Now, yes, in real life, there are some, and yes, there's a difference in size between these molecules. And so in real life, there are adjustments we make, and that's the whole point of what I'm getting at, is that if all gases in a container are ideal,
Professor, are you writing?
Oh, let's see if it catches up. I've just started to write, but it does seem to be frozen. So let's see if it catches up here. And the answer is no. One moment. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
There we go. So, if all gases is a container, yes, can I has cheeseburger? If all gases in a container are ideal. Since the gases do not interact with each other, except to collide, the total pressure in the container is equal to the sum of the individual pressures of the gases. So let's see, the total pressure of the container is equal to the sum of the individual pressures. So these individual pressures, the term for that is partial pressures. And so in this example, what we could write is an equation where the total pressure is equal to the pressure of carbon dioxide plus the pressure of nitrogen plus the pressure of neon. And each of those individually are partial pressures. And this may be a fussy point, but if the gases are not ideal, then the total is not necessarily the sum of the individual pressures, because they might start interacting with each other somehow. So if the gases are not ideal, the total pressure is not necessarily the sum of the partial pressures. And that's why it's not just a nonsense topic to have this concept of a partial pressure, because you might say, well, of course things add together. Well, of course, if they all behave ideally. If not, no, it's not of course, then they don't add. And later on in lab, we'll have a day where we talk about when there's what kinds of interactions can cause what kind of behavior. But that's way outside of where I wanted to go in lecture today. Today, I just wanted to get the concept of a partial pressure because I already used it in lab. Questions about that topic? Can you explain the meaning of ideal? Yes, if I could flip back to the lab notes to show you, ideal is where you make certain assumptions about how a gas behaves. And so there are three that I identified, and that's the gases should not have any volume of their own self, they should not experience any attractions, and they should not lose any energy when they collide. And you can see the three effects that this would have if they didn't obey those properties. If they took up volume, that would change how much volume there really is the container for them to wiggle around in. If they had interactions, then that would change the pressure that they experience, and that's exactly what I'm talking about here with partial pressure. And then if they lost energy, that would, in theory, change their temperature. As I had said the other day, those first two are the ones that really matter in real life. That, yes, how much space they take up can change by how they behave, and most certainly if they have intermolecular forces, that changes how they behave. All right, so now back to lecture. I think I already gave you this next topic. Let me just go back through the notes. Ah, right there. So this is the last page of the first day of notes. And that does mean it's posted already, but those of you present can see this now. And it's a graph of molecular energy distribution. You might remember that I had said that molecules at any temperature are not all going to be traveling at just one speed. And so depending what temperature they at, they change what speeds they'll have. Suppose you have to have a molecule moving fast enough in order for it to be able to do something. In this case, we could say, well, how much energy does it need to have to be able to evaporate? So on this graph, I said barrier to evaporation. Well, we're later on going to learn that the term for the average energy needed for that is heat of vaporization. So that molecules that have greater than that amount of energy should be able to evaporate. This physical property that occurs because a fraction of molecules can always evaporate, that's called vapor pressure. And you might remember that that topic came up in lab as well, because we're doing a lab where you're collecting a gas generated from a solution. And that means that water in vapor is automatically present as well. And so that's the vapor pressure of water. So we've reached the end of the material I wanted to make sure that we get through before the quiz. So now let me make up the review for the quiz. Now, someone was asking, what's the format going to be? It's going to be a mixture of, someone's asking, is temperature the only factor in molecular energy distribution? The short answer is yes, because temperature is a measure of the average energy. Now, someone was asking what the format of the quiz is going to look like. If you've been a former student of mine, it's going to be very identical, meaning it's going to be a mixture of maybe short answer theory problems. Like, what if I asked you, why does it matter that the gases are ideal if you're adding together partial pressures? It won't be worded exactly like that, maybe, but it'll get to that same point. And so you'd have to explain exactly what I just did here, that if you have intermolecular forces that can affect their pressure, then that's why the total won't equal the sum of the individual parts. Wow, that's kind of deep, isn't it? So, but that's the kind of problem. Yes, there'll be some calculation problems. So that's why, even if the problems don't look exactly like what's in the homework, that's why I've, some of the homework problems I've assigned that I have, because they get at some numerical practice. So all that said, let's get to the topics. So this is quiz one. So first thing is that it's going to be about the ideal gases, which means you need to know these three assumptions, and we already named them earlier. They're about no volume, no intermolecular forces, and no loss of energy. So you need to know the ideal gas law. What I call the original, PV equals NRT. The change in conditions. I'll make that a separate line here. Then I just showed you how you could use the equations to calculate density. So that's a modification of the ideal gas law, and molar mass. Someone's asking, will the quiz be during class? No, it'll be where you download it, work on it on your own, and upload it again later. That's exactly why I had wanted you to do the survey, to be ready to do something like that. Okay, now, pressure. What is it? And what are some of the common units? How do we upload it if you are waitlisted? You don't. So we'll talk about that offline later. Okay, then STP. And for this class, we're going to use 1 atmosphere, 0 degrees Celsius, because that's exactly what we do in the lab. And then what I refer to as the graph, which is that graph of molecular energy distribution. Now, the general rule, for those of you who have not had me before, is if I haven't talked about it in class, it's not on the quiz. So to make that more explicit, we never got up to the point about talking about root mean square velocity. There's no effusion or diffusion. And there's no real gas laws. So again, if we talked about it, yes, it is on the quiz. Even in sections, though, that we've talked about, if there's some smaller detail that we didn't go over, then it wouldn't be on the quiz. It's whatever we've gone over in lecture. So that's it for today, unless anyone has any more questions. How much time will we have to take the quiz? My plan right now is to give you 24 hours. And not that it's going to be so hard you'll need that long. That's just how much time I'm planning. Yes, the molecular energy distribution graph, that is the graph that's the high, medium, and low temperature, the one that's also involved with what's known as kinetic molecular theory. Are the notes from lecture a continuation notes from lab a continuation from lecture? Not exactly. We talked about some lecture topics because we had to in order to understand the lab. So, like, we talked about the three assumptions of ideal gas laws in lab. And we talked about vapor pressure, which I forgot to write down, even though I said it. The whole point of molecular energy distribution is that's why you have vapor pressure. So we've talked about vapor pressure in lecture and lab. And that's why I'm saying that portion of the notes is going to be on the quiz. The graph, what I'm calling the graph, yes, is in page 4 of the first day's notes. Does the mass of a molecule make it move faster and slower? Yes. And so there's a difference in saying how much energy a molecule has versus how much speed it has. And that discussion will come up when we get to effusion and diffusion. So that we're not going to worry about at the moment.